This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana, originating from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Robin Dow and Renee Martin are producing today, and we're joined in studio to begin by Quentin Anthony Anderson. He is a 35-year-old business person in Baton Rouge, running for Congress in the 6th District, graduate of Louisiana Tech undergraduate and LSU Law Center. Bright guy and right in the prime of life, and he wants to be a member of the U.S. House of Representatives, and he is in the newly configured 6th District, which is a majority African-American district, and it is represented currently by Garrett Graves, who chose not to run for re-election, a Republican who felt the odds were against him in the new district. So he is waiting probably to run for the U.S. Senate in 2 years, or waiting for a court decision that he hopes will reverse what has happened, and there is a challenge, but it appears that, at least for now, we're going to have an election on November 5th, and there will be a new 6th District congressperson. It could be Cleo Fields, who ironically lost his previous district in Congress due to redistricting and a challenge that his district was not constitutionally valid. Today, it probably would be viewed as being constitutional, but back in the day, Cleo Fields lost his district, and 27 years later, he's back as the favorite in this race. But Quentin Anthony Anderson has been running since March, and he is a sharp young man, and I've met him, and he obviously has a story to tell, and he's going against a seasoned politico, and I guess that's the first question is, why are you choosing to run when it appears the inertia is that Cleo Fields is the likely winner, but you obviously have other thoughts. Why?
Well, I think that voters themselves don't want to vote for Cleo Fields. I think that that is the presumption because Cleo has a vaunted machine, but the people that he puts in those buses and in those vans, they still have to want to vote for the candidate. And I think that the overwhelming sentiment that I've experienced, not just since March, but certainly since March, is that voters are looking for an alternative. Voters are kind of tired of the same old politics as usual, and Cleo Fields is probably the best representation of politics as usual, where you're not earning votes, you're just sort of turning on a machine. You're not talking about the issues, you're just sort of paying the grass tops to make sure that their people show up. And at a certain point, that shows a disrespect for the process because it shows a disrespect for the people. And I think there's an appetite for something different.
Well, Cleo Fields right now is a state senator, so he talks a lot about state issues, and he's been on this show, and he's talked about national ones as well. And my guess is that his positions are similar to yours. Have you found a distinction on something he has said or something on the record that you take exception to?
I think values is just as big of a deal as the issues. I think your convictions on the issues are just as relevant. I think what Louisiana voters want is bold, courageous leadership, not sort of wishy-washy, weak-kneed leadership. I think what voters don't want is they don't want to feel as if their representative, when he gets into those rooms of power, that he gets influenced by big money or powerful interests. They want to know that you're going to be unapologetic in your representation of their interests. And I don't know that that's how voters feel about Cleo Fields.
877-217-5757. That's 877-217-5757. That's your number. Emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. Quentin Anthony Anderson, full of vim and vigor, taking on a Louisiana legend in Cleo Fields. But when you say values, is that a code word for something else?
Nothing that isn't obvious in public knowledge. We're running to win, and so part of running to win means you have to draw contrasts. And that means that everybody's record is brought into the race, mine included. You don't run at this level and expect people to sort of ignore your vulnerabilities or the baggage that you might bring into the race. And so it's not just the stuff that gets the headlines. It's not just the Edwin Edwards stuff or the Landry deal. It is the fact, you know, there's substantive things in the legislature that are, I think, ripe for criticism, including his record on voting, not just his positions
well,
on them.
What has he voted on that you don't
agree with? Well, that's just
agree
it. It's the votes that he doesn't take. He's one of the most abstaining senators in the legislature. And I think that that shows that when there's political capital to be spent, he's thinking about Cleo Fields. He's not thinking about the people that he represents.
Okay, can you give me an example?
Well, he's abstained from over 70 votes.
But a particular vote, though, that you would take exception to?
Well, generally speaking, they've been votes on issues pertaining to LGBTQ issues, and I think that the LGBTQ community can sense that lack of conviction and courageousness when it comes to his representation of those communities.
But he was, I know, against the transgender stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the easy stuff to oppose.
Well, is that easy, though?
It is when you, I'm not a big fan of gerrymandering, but gerrymandering has created, politically safe districts where sometimes it's not always very difficult to take obvious mm-hmm. votes, but it's where he's had mm-hmm. to spend real political capital that he's decided to do that for himself, whether as opposed to maybe some of the more marginalized communities that he doesn't identify with.
Quentin, one of the things, a few things that I agreed with Newt Gingrich on was that he said politics is the art of the possible.
That's right.
So we can have these grand ideas and we can have opinions, but quite often to get something done, you have to move to the middle. I heard you allude to the Landry deal. Well, that worked well for Jeff Landry, and apparently it's worked well for Cleo Fields, and it's why you have a district to run in, because those two came together on doing this way, and I don't know that there's anything nefarious about that. Some would say that's just working the system in an appropriate way. Your response?
I think that's a charitable way of looking at it, and I think that saying that that's just working the system is another way of saying that's politics, Louisiana politics as usual. I consider it, particularly as a Democrat and particularly as a black man, I consider it a dereliction of duty. Cleo Fields' responsibility within the party is to help turn out the black vote in the state. It's mm-hmm. his vaunted machine that everybody talks about. And when we had a black man that was essentially the nominee of the Democratic Party running for governor, a role that he found himself in almost 30 years ago, instead of doing everything that he could to prevent the Landry administration from coming in, he cut a deal. He looked out for himself. He looked towards the future. He wasn't thinking about the policies that Landry would implement that the voters would have to live with. What he was thinking about was, I'm going to get myself out of here and go to D.C. next year.
Well, you're putting words in his mouth, and it worked out that way. But at that time, I don't think we could have foreseen what happened. And, of course, Jeff Landry has a mind of his own. Cleo Fields actually drew districts that would have cut Julia Letlow out, not Garrett Graves. Mm-hmm. But it was Jeff Landry who wanted Garrett Graves to be spanked, and that's what we have. And constitutionally, it's been upheld so far by the courts. But Cleo Fields is a political operative, and after many years, you're right, I'm sure he does have a machine of sorts. But politicians who win generally have machines, and you're a young man, and I suspect if you're around and you're a bright guy, I would say win or lose, we haven't heard the last of this man. He will have a machine at some point, but who's in the machine right now? Who's running the campaign for Quentin Anderson for Congress?
Well, it's largely family and friends, and I have very competent family and friends, but I won't lie to you. We don't have the over $500,000 budget that Cleo Fields does, but also we don't need to. Our goals are pretty straightforward because we do feel like the sentiment in the district is that they're looking for an option. So we just need to make sure that every voter in the district knows that we're running. That's why, we didn't start the campaign at filing. We've been running since the spring because we recognize we needed the runway to boost name ID, talk about the issues, and establish ourselves as a credible candidate. And I think that we've mm-hmm. done that.
Well, there are five candidates running,
yep.
but there are really three who are making serious efforts, and one is, of course, Cleo Fields. The other is Elbert Guillory,
That's
the lone
right.
Republican who is a serious candidate. And then this man, who I think is also a serious candidate, is on the ballot as well, and the election is 104 days away.
Yeah.
We begin with Zach in Southdown. Zach, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning. Hi, Zach. Zach, you're on.
Quentin.
Hey.
Good morning, Quentin.
Hey, Zach.
I am impressed by your thought process, and I'm disturbed by this conversation because, Jim, you've had Cleo on this station many times, and you've never drilled him the way you're drilling this young man right here. I'm disturbed by that.
I don't think that is correct, but please go. You have the floor, my friend. Go ahead.
Thank you. And so, Quentin, stay the course because you're right. A lot of people do not want to vote for Cleo because he's been there. We saw his record, what he's done in the past. Those things do not disappear.
All right. And when you say I didn't drill Cleo. Well, Cleo he's a good politician, and he generally doesn't say inflammatory things about people he even disagrees with. And you're doing it. You're taking it to him, and if I were running against him, I'd do exactly the same thing, probably in a little different way, but you're trying to create a distinction, and you believe there is a valid distinction between the two.
Drawing contrast is especially, you know, I know I'm not running against an incumbent, but I think effectively because of his role and his name ID, it's similar. And what I've told candidates when I've consulted with them in the past is when you're running against an incumbent, you don't just have the luxury to make a case for yourself. You do have to tell voters, well, why not sort of my default choice? And with Cleo Fields, particularly in the Black community, a lot of people feel like if you're going to present a choice, tell me why not to vote for this man that has been on my ballot for 30 years. And that's my responsibility.
1995, he got more votes running for governor than Jeff Landry got last year. So Cleo's been around a while. He's around this time. We'll talk more after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Quentin Anderson, Democratic candidate for Congress in the 6th District. He is in the House to talk about his campaign for a little while longer. If you get a busy signal, we've got some folks waiting to talk with him, so please be brief. But the number is 877-217-5757. Graduate of McKinley High School and Louisiana Tech and LSU Law Center. And I assume you're practicing law?
Nope.
Did you take the bar?
No. Contrary to my dad's wishes.
Well.
But luckily, I'm still
Woody Jenkins. I heard he was a star student at LSU, never took the bar.
I didn't go to law school intending to.
You just wanted to expand your horizons.
Huh? Well, you know, I grew up admiring the sport of politics, and every person I respected.
But I know you have a business, Anderson Creative, and you do tech work, right?
Yeah, web design, graphic design, largely for nonprofits, small businesses.
Okay. Yeah. Craig in Natchitoches, you're on with our guest, Quentin Anthony Anderson. Hi, yes. Craig.
Good morning, Jim. A quick question for you and one for Mr. Anderson. Jim, for you, when do you think you'll have Dan Moldea back on as a guest?
We'll have him soon. I like the fact that you like him, and I like the fact that he loves coming on this show. But he called it. He called it. He said Kamala was going to be the one, and she is the one. So.
And for Mr. Anderson, my wife is the big advocate for equal pay for women and the women's ERA. Your thoughts on those two issues?
Yeah, so I mean, right now, if I'm not mistaken, I think women make either 82 or 84 cents to the dollar that a man makes. And I think that that is still a reflection that women in the workplace are viewed differently than men. And I think that part of that is hopefully aging out. As a millennial, that's never been sort of my approach. And most millennials that I know don't sort of view men and women in terms of the workplace in a silo. In individual silos. And so I absolutely believe in equal pay for equal work. I want to close the gender pay gap, and I absolutely want to pass the ERA. It would be great if Louisiana could be the state to do that. I've always held out a hope that we'd be the state to kind of put it over the top. But if not, I think that there are actions that we could do at the federal level to, if not pass the ERA, pass what the spirit of the ERA is in lieu of doing that. But I don't think that the fight for passing the ERA ever should die.
What's your first recollection of politics?
Oh, man. I think probably my first recollection of politics might have been Clinton's impeachment, watching it in the living room.
That was 1998, so you were 10.
Yeah.
December 19th, 1998, and he was impeached for, quote, lying about an affair with an intern, Monica Lewinsky. And No majority vote in the Senate on this, though. Now, Trump, 57 senators did vote to convict him, which would have thrown him out of office and made him ineligible to ever run again. And one of those was Bill Cassidy, who's now cozying up to Donald Trump, says he'll vote for him.
Yeah.
So that's politics, isn't it?
It is. It is. And I think in the Republican Party, especially now, I think that there were some that held out hope after 2016, after 2020, that maybe Donald Trump was an aberration in the party. And that they could sort of be the voice of reason to say, see, I told you guys, and then you guys came back to the middle. I think that's no longer the case. I think if you want a future in Republican politics, I think that you have to show fealty to Donald Trump.
Well, he's a three-time nominee now, and he still as of now, is a favorite, although a much slighter favorite now than he was a few days ago. By the way, I'm honored. I'm a member of the, quote, Downtown Rotary Club, which I think is the fourth largest in the world. But today I've been invited. I will be going to the St. George Rotary Club. So this should be interesting at Portobello's on George O'Neill Drive. So anybody within earshot, if you'd like to go, this should be fascinating dealing and talking with this fine group of people in St. George. What'd you make of the St. George saga?
So I was actually the communications director for Together Baton Rouge and Together Louisiana when St. George was on the ballot to be incorporated. And I'm opposed. I was opposed to it. I still am opposed to it. I'm not a big fan of some of the deals that some of the mayoral candidates have made, which is to essentially stop fighting it and just embrace it, which I get the inevitability of it. But it was an effort to try to craft a school district. It was an effort to segregate our schools, and it was something that I was opposed to. I think that when we have our schools as a community, as a collective, not black schools, not white schools, but our schools, that we mm-hmm. as a collective have a responsibility to save those schools, not to sort of pull mm-hmm. our kids out and leave their kids in. And I think that that's what the effort to form St. George was all about. And I think that if that sort of dynamic is what they wanted, then they should pay for it. There shouldn't be any sort of deals that are made by EBR to make it easier on them to segregate from our school district.
Dan Downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Mr. Anderson, given his mansion off Highland Road, has your negative research on Cleo Fields uncovered anything untoward regarding his involvement with the Leadership Academy?
I think most people would concur, Dan, that that's a good thing in our community, but Cleo Fields, and he's been blistered for this. He's not the only one, by the way, but based on the way things work in Louisiana and in other places, your domicile is where you get your homestead exemption, and he has another house in North Baton Rouge, but he lives in a different place. And they, his previous opponent, Pat Smith, brought it to him hard, and she didn't win, but is that an issue in this race? Obviously, for Congress, you can be anywhere from Louisiana and run in any district, but you're smiling.
Well, because I do think that it's relevant, and I don't think that, you know, I think the admiration that some have for the cleverness of being able to work the system is fun, but I think when you don't live in a community, how can you represent its interests? You know, when you're not the one who's driving through their traffic, you're not sending your kids to their schools, you're not, you know, having to live in their neighborhoods, how can you represent their interests? You know, it sort of shows a sense of disrespect.
But he spends a lot of time in that community. He's not, even though he doesn't live there.
I don't know what spending a lot of time in that community means. I think if you're leasing a property to a constituent, that doesn't really count as sort
of... Well, he does a little more than that. But at any rate, he does. I'm with you. He does not live there. And he's not the only one. And I remember David Duke when he won in 1989 for the House. He didn't live in his district either.
And I hate the practice. No matter who does it, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, I hate the practice.
But he rented a house, and he told me he lived there, and yet we did some research, and there had been no utility bills, no water bill. He didn't have anything turned on, but he lived there, so it must have been really something. Paul Anopoulosis. Paul, you're on with Quentin Anderson. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to your guests. Just a quick question. I'm not a Cleo obvious person, you know, just mm-hmm. right out. But just a question on you know, forget Cleo right now. You're trying to become my representative.
Yes, sir.
Give me two things that you would try to push in the district, since we have, you know, very light representation now, that you would try to push in the district for the district's development.
Yeah. So I guess two things. One, especially in places like Opelousas and places like Alexandria and Shreveport, you all have seen what looks like disinvestment and abandonment. Sometimes it's in your city center, sometimes it's in the neighborhoods. And what I want to do is I want to make sure that we're bringing investment back to these towns and that we're keeping young people. I want to expand opportunity zones, which is something that got started under President Obama, and I want to bring those to places like Alexandria and Shreveport and Opelousas so that those downtowns and those city centers are revitalized and they look like life again. The other thing, and this is one that has come to me from from constituents is investing in our young people. Crime has been a big issue across the district, whether you're in a city or you're in the rural areas, particularly young people, people feeling as if they have nothing to do and they have nothing to lose. And I've told people, when people have nothing to lose, they act like it. And when they have something to lose, they act like it. I want to bring federal dollars to invest in youth workforce development and youth summer jobs programs. I want to raise the stakes for these young people. You know, I'm sure you've heard this before. You know, somebody's right on the verge of some foolishness and then says, I'm not going to lose my job over this. When you have something to lose, when you have a wife and kids or a husband and you have a good job and a good home, you think about those things when you're at that sort of vortex in life where you could make the wrong decision or the right decision. I want to raise the stakes for young people, and I want to use federal dollars to try to do that.
Quentin Anthony Anderson, who is a law school graduate of LSU, pride of McKinley High, Louisiana Tech, and he's with us for a few more moments. He's running for Congress in the 6th District. Your number, if you'd like to get in, is 877-217-5757. This is Jim Inkster. Thanks for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. A few more minutes with Quentin Anthony Anderson, running for Congress in the 6th District. The election is 104 days away. And Cleo Fields, four other people are on the ballot, including Albert Lee Guillory, frequent guest on this show, who's the lone Republican in the field. And it should be quite a race. Hopefully there will be debates. And Quentin Anthony Anderson, if you've heard him in the first two segments, he's a sharp man and sure has a great future in Louisiana politics, whether this one goes his way or not. He's a poet, too. I think you're a protege of the great Chancellor Skidmore, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. We go back since I was 15. I was part of a program called City at Peace here in Baton Rouge, and I think he was like the third director for it, and he was the one that stayed the longest, and he kind of had the longest impact on me.
Well, this is it's great to see you because we don't have as much attention on people like you who grew up in the inner city who are doing really, really well,
yeah.
And we concentrate on the few bad apples who make a lot of noise and do things that are inappropriate, but those people who do those kinds of things are in the distinct minority, and there are more people like Quentin Anthony Anderson, which gives us hope for where we're going. And you want to be a public servant,
yeah.
The call to public service. We say we generally don't have our best and brightest seeking office anymore. Why do you want to get into this racket?
Well, two reasons. One, public service is just kind of embedded in me. I'm the son and grandson of preachers, son and grandson of war vets. The idea of servant leadership is just sort of embedded in the values that my family instilled in me. But the other reason is I think that public service, particularly in Congress, particularly being a representative in our representative democracy, it takes a unique set of skills and approach to be effective. But it's where you can make the most change. In 2015, I got to serve as campaign director for the Campaign for Common Sense School Discipline Reform in Illinois. And that was where I got to actually get a bill passed in a split legislature with a Republican governor. And the goal was to get some school-to-prison pipeline reform legislation through and get votes from folks that weren't just progressives. And that creative approach of trying to figure out how to get 10 people in a room that have different backgrounds and different perspectives and different interests to a yes for different reasons than why I'm there, that's not only fun, but that's the necessary part of governing. And that excites me to be able to put those skills to use. We were able to get that bill passed, get it signed into law by a Republican. And it wasn't because we just spoke to the choir. We figured out how to speak to other people's interests. That's a skill that's necessary if you're going to be a representative. It's a skill that I feel good about. And it's one that I want to put to use for the people in this district, particularly for the most marginalized and vulnerable communities that often get overlooked because they don't make campaign contributions.
Lisa on Bluebonnet. Lisa, you're on with Quentin Anderson. Hi, Lisa.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, Lisa.
Hi. Look, I'm calling in. Evidently, I drive right about the same time every day, and that's when I hear your show, Mr. Inkster, and I do appreciate the opportunity to find out some things that otherwise I might not think about tuning into. This is the first time I'm hearing Mr. Anderson speak, and I am enjoying hearing you know, the back and forth as far as information. My one observation that I felt compelled to call in about was that, you know, I believe in pushback and calling. I like when you ask the question, clarify about values and whatnot. But I have to say, for the first several minutes, 10 minutes tuning in, it felt like he was not actually getting to complete his sentence before your thought came out for the pushback. And so that was the purpose of my call, is maybe let him
finish. Okay. Well, I'm going to cut you off and let him have the floor. But thank you, Lisa. Love you. And thanks for listening. And I'm always into corrective criticism. But is there anything that perhaps I interrupted you on that you wanted to complete as far as your thoughts and sentiments that you want to express, Quentin?
Well, I know that the gentleman asked me about other opposition research, and one of the things I do want to say is, you know, this campaign is not just about Cleo Fields. You know, making that contrast is important, but the more important thing is, if not Cleo Fields, then why me, right? And I want voters to understand that, you know, representing the district is important to me. In a representative democracy, you have to be able to trust that the person that's in that room, when the doors close, is going to have the conviction to represent you unapologetically. And I'm running because not only do I believe I can do that, but I want to do that. You know, that's the reason why I've been knocking on doors since March. It's me out there knocking on doors. It's me out there talking to voters. I want to represent their interests. That, to me, mm-hmm. is the service that I can give back. And so it goes beyond just being anti-Cleo. I want people to vote for me and be excited about voting for me because they're pro my vision.
Okay. Patricia in Magnolia Woods, you'll be our final caller for Quentin Anderson. Thank you. Thank you. Patricia.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm very happy about the prospect of another Democratic congressman for Louisiana, but Garrett Graves has been fairly hardworking about mm-hmm. things like coastal restoration. And one thing is the windfall elimination penalty for Louisiana state workers that the Social Security benefits are cut because of the Louisiana retirement plan. I was wondering if you were going to continue that kind of work if you get elected.
Yeah, and that's actually been brought up at the doors. I don't think that any federal benefits should be compromised by state law or state policy. I think that your Social Security is sacred, and not only will I fight to defend it in its current form and make sure that it's sustained, but I'll also fight against any efforts at the, you know, state or local level to try to take away your benefits or reduce them.
Well, thank you. Let's have you back, and good luck on the trail. Quentin Anthony Anderson, a name to remember. I think you got a great start in politics, but you're going for the gold. Congress is a tough place to start. Donald Trump ran for president the first time around, and it kind of worked out. He won, didn't he? 2016. You never know.
I should head to Iowa then.
Thank you, Quinn. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
And we're now joined by Leanne Caldwell. About a year ago joined us. She's with the Washington Post and covers politics, a fascinating person who has a great backstory, and she served with NBC as Capitol Hill correspondent for a few years, and she has been covering national politics now for over a decade, and she is on the trail of the story of the week, perhaps the story of the year, and that's the ascension of Kamala Harris now as the presumptive Democratic nominee for President of the United States. And she will be on the ballot, it appears, against Donald Trump on November 5th. And good morning to you, Leanne Caldwell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back.
Well, it's always good to hear your distinctive voice, and I see you and hear you in all kinds of places. So we're pleased to have you on Talk Louisiana. And if you have a question or comment for Leanne, the number is 877-217-5757. Well, you have collaborated with one of your colleagues for a story about the Kamala Harris story this week. It's the Harris Show Now. Good morning, early birds. We have big news, and the news of the week is that Kamala Harris, in the span of, what, 3 days now, 3 days, has raised, I think, over $20 million, $200 million, and she is all but assured of being the Democratic nominee. And 3 days ago, we were still speculating whether or not Joe Biden would try to stay in the race. It has been a fascinating 72 hours, hasn't it?
Oh, my goodness. It absolutely has. As for an election that we as political reporters thought was going to be quite boring, considering there were two candidates running against each other who everyone knew pretty much everything about, Donald Trump and Joe Biden. There's hardly anything new. Now everything has just been, you know, turned upside down. It has really been fascinating. There had been lots of rumors toward the end of last week that Sunday was going to be the day that Joe Biden was going to step aside. But no one ever really knew if that was actually the case. Turned out it was. Shortly after, he decided, he announced that he was going to endorse his VP, Kamala Harris. And there was so much worry and concern before the fact that Kamala Harris wouldn't have the support, she wouldn't be able to win, that she wasn't ready. This was among Democrats. And wow, have we seen in the last 3 days how the party has absolutely rallied around her.
It is an amazing turn of events. And when we look at things that would be used against her, independent of anything she says or does, the fact that she is a minority, a woman from San Francisco, a Democrat, all of those would not in the past have been conducive to the Democrats saying, hey, let's make her our standard bearer. But she has taken the party by storm, and I think there's a collective sigh of relief that Joe Biden is not running. And the record of the Biden-Harris 3.5 years, I think, is something she can run on. But as we know, that record will be depicted by former President Trump as abysmal. And so who wins the battle? Is it a case in which we're headed for another photo finish, Leanne?
I think in modern-day politics, it's going to be a photo finish. The country is pretty evenly divided. There's a small sliver of voters who a handful of swing states who actually decide elections, presidential elections. It's really quite incredible, actually. We know, based off of a new memo out this morning from the Harris campaign, that they are going to focus on the Midwest, the blue wall states of Michigan, Wisconsin,
Pennsylvania.
Oh my gosh, I'm forgetting. Pennsylvania. Thank you.
Well, yeah, we're going to pick up on that. Those are the three biggies. Back with Leanne after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Renee Martin and Robin Dow producing, and the remarkable Leanne Caldwell, reporter for The Washington Post, is with us. And we're talking national politics 104 days before November 5th. And it appears that it is a fait accompli that Kamala Harris will be the Democratic nominee for president, and she will be running against Donald John Trump on the 5th day of November. And we invite your participation at 877-217-5757. As we went to the break, you were talking, Leanne, about those three key states, Wisconsin, Michigan, yeah. Pennsylvania. If Kamala Harris retains the states that Hillary Clinton won and wins those, she will be the president. It'll be real close, 270 to 268, if everything else stayed the same, which means the closest it could be. But she yeah. could win. Now, Joe Biden, 4 years ago, he got, in addition to those three, he also got Georgia. He got Arizona and Nevada, your home state, and it appears those will be long shots for Harris, so she has to win most likely in those three states. But a listener asked a good question. Could her running mate choice, for example, if she chose Mark Kelly, the senator from Arizona, could he bring her Arizona? Is there a possibility that the running mate could actually make a difference this time?
People think that it absolutely could make a difference. And with the Sun Belt states, the Harris team is actually arguing that they're in a better position than Joe Biden was. They're not saying that explicitly, but that is what they are insinuating. The fact that they are much more diverse states, that Harris could actually
perhaps win Nevada and Arizona and maybe Georgia. And they're saying maybe North Carolina because of the diversity of her coalition when Joe Biden wasn't doing well. Now, that is one huge argument for Mark Kelly that people are making, is that it would absolutely put Arizona in play. Mark Kelly ran in the past two elections because he had to have win a special election, and then he won his full term in the 2022 in a purple state, and he won well, easily. I shouldn't say easily, but he won. And so that is one argument in favor of someone like Mark Kelly, who could absolutely help Kamala Harris.
Yeah, well, Nevada, your former, it's your home state, actually, your former home. It has 6 electoral votes. Arizona has 11. So even if she were to win Arizona, she still would meet Michigan and Pennsylvania. So that makes it a case in which she's got to win some combination of 3 states or 4 states and keep everything else Hillary Clinton had to win in the Electoral College. So now we're probably going to have a campaign largely in just a few states, Leanne.
Yeah, that's right. That's how these presidential elections are. It is hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars spent in a very small percentage of states. And now your listener asked about Mark Kelly in Arizona. One argument for Governor Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania is that he could help Harris win Pennsylvania. I have spoken to Democrats and Republicans in Pennsylvania who say that Shapiro is so well-liked, his approval ratings are in the 60s. People really like him as a governor. People like him as a person. And Republicans say that it could really do a lot for Kamala Harris in Pennsylvania if he is the nominee. And so you could probably expect Harris to choose a running mate with some electoral advantage, especially since she is running a campaign and with just 100 days to go, a little over that until Election Day. So the strategy is absolutely going to matter here.
And Shapiro was just spectacular in the way he responded to the shooting of Donald Trump in Butler, PA. He was really, really remarkable. You can tell he is a guy who has some chops, another listener notes, what if she chose Whitmer of Michigan? That would be something to have two women on the ticket, and that might actually work. If you got two men on the other side, why not have two women on the Democratic side?
Well, that would be quite something. But then racist and sexist attacks that are already being thrown at Harris by Republicans shows that is still being used politically as a vulnerability, the fact that she is a woman. And so I think that it makes, even though Gretchen Whitmer is also beloved and people say a rising star in the Democratic Party, Democrats think it's too risky to have two women on the ticket. That's just, you know, the time we live in, I guess.
It's probably not time, but things changed. I'm old enough to remember I was a young reporter in 1984, 40 years ago, when Walter Mondale chose Geraldine Ferraro and got one state. That's all he got against Ronald Reagan. And here Kamala Harris was chosen by Joe Biden, and he won the election by 7 million votes. David in Atlanta. David, good morning. You're on with Leanne Caldwell of the Washington Post. Hi, David.
Hi, good morning. The House of Representatives, no doubt at the behest of Donald Trump, killed the perfectly good bipartisan Senate immigration bill. Have the Republicans in the House of Representatives being against anything against anything that Trump supports, because he wanted the issue, of course. Has the House of Representatives ever passed their own immigration bill?
All right. Well, that's Mike Johnson, our speaker from Louisiana, who's in charge, and they turned all the way around on a bill they'd agreed to. And that was because Donald Trump, I don't think, wanted Joe Biden to have a victory on immigration, with it being the centerpiece of the Trump campaign. But your thoughts, Leanne?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That bipartisan bill was a major bipartisan achievement. The most expansive border security immigration bill that the country has seen, mostly border security bill, in decades. But Republicans did not agree to it because President Trump, like you said, didn't want to give Joe Biden a victory on the border. But Republicans have passed their own border security bill. They did that last year. It's called HR2. But it was it was a complete party line vote. Just Republicans passed it. There was no Democratic support. It didn't win nowhere in the Democratic Senate. So it wasn't a real piece of legislation.
877-217-5757 to get in with Leanne Caldwell in our remaining time with her, an amazing reporter for The Washington Post. And last year when she was on our show, we noted that she was a champion swimmer, distance swimming at North Carolina State. And that prompts a listener to ask about your college state of North Carolina. That one is still on the board as a, quote, swing state. And the Republicans are apparently concerned about their gubernatorial candidate in that state. Could he bring down Donald Trump in North Carolina? What are your thoughts?
Oh, North Carolina is going to be so fascinating this year for many reasons. North Carolina is always just out of reach for Democrats. Of course, President Obama, Barack Obama, won that state, but Democrats haven't been able to win it since. And it's always one that they want to win, that they say is within reach. But you're absolutely right about the governor, the gubernatorial candidate for the Republican Party. He is quite extreme. He could drag down Donald Trump, but there's also been a lot of gerrymandering in this state. So Democrats are going to lose 3, maybe 4 congressional House seats in that state in this election. And so Kamala Harris's team says that they are going to play there. They have a dynamic new leader of the Democratic Party there. She's 26 years old. She's enthusiastic. She's aggressive. She's energetic. So it's going to be a fascinating state to watch.
Helen Monroe asked about J.D. Vance and asked whether Donald Trump would have chosen him as his running mate if he had known Harris was going to be the Democratic challenger to him. That might have changed things. That's a good point. What do you think?
There's been a lot of speculation about that, actually. Of course, I don't know. Donald Trump isn't one to admit mistakes. He doubles down on his decisions and his faults and whatever decision he makes. But it's interesting because when he chose J.D. Vance, I talked to a lot of Republicans who told me that this is a sign of Donald Trump's confidence and where he stands in the election. The fact that J.D. Vance doesn't really bring much of an electoral advantage to Donald Trump, he's, quote, a mini-me of Trump, is how someone, a Republican, described it. Trump is going to win Ohio. He doesn't expand the demographic. So perhaps they were thinking about a Joe Biden competitor. And, yeah, there's been speculation that he might have chosen differently if he had known what's going to happen. And looking at Trump's Truth Social, he seems quite peeved that the race has changed.
He does, but he says he will debate, and that will be a different kind of debate than we saw in Atlanta. I think we can agree.
Yeah, absolutely, it will.
And these two will take no prisoners, and perhaps go places that others wouldn't. But some say, in order to combat Donald Trump, you've got to fight him on his level, and his level, of course, is anything goes. And I think Kamala Harris has shown she's willing to go just about anywhere when it comes to the former president. So it should be a fascinating 104 days. Thank you so much, Leanne Caldwell, and congrats on your great work.
Thank you.
And we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.